Hello to all of our two and four-legged listeners. It's Nathan here from Rightpaw, and welcome to another episode of What the Bark. We're here to discuss a very interesting topic this week. It's another special with George where we can dive into the world of genetics and the world of dog breeders. And we're going to learn about something really interesting this week, something that I didn't know too much about. But George, I think, is probably a question you get on a daily basis.
Daily, yes. Coat colours.
Coat colours.
And we're not talking about, you know, jackets.
No fur coats, no. Or a different type of fur coat.
Maybe we can talk about fur coats in another pod, but their colours, it's interesting because, you know, as people realise, George has been in this industry for a very long time, and 20 years ago I would have had no one paying to test for coat colour. It was just unheard of. All they did was just pay to get disease testing done. Whereas today, it's almost an opposite. The new sort of breeders are more into the phenotypic tests. So, yeah. With coat color comes a lot of coat questions. Comes a lot of, you know, confusion.
Yeah, it's a very complex. I mean, a lot of people wouldn't even know that you can actually do a DNA test and test for, you know, those markers that will determine what the color of the offspring and the dogs would be. It's amazing to think that's even possible.
And the impact of different combinations of colors. And what drives me crazy, Nathan, is that you can have the same genetic result, but the color is different in another breed. You know,
really?
That's what we're going to. So what I've thought is if at the end of this podcast, I can teach Nathan and get him to understand some basic coat colors, then we've achieved
mission accomplished. I will be the student, will become the master. We'll see.
Yeah. So, you know, we're going to apologize firstly to some of those people that might be listening and are so-called experts, but we've got to start at the basics.
I think it's good. We've got to bring everyone on that journey. I'm keen to learn.
So, you know, it is a difficult topic. It is a complex topic, but, you know, maybe before we start, if people want to, there are some great educational tools on the website. And I like to, when people always sort of phone me or email me, I don't like to sort of give them the basic answer straight away. I want people to read. So there's a website. You know, if you buy your computer there, Nathan, you can Google. If you just go dog coat color UK, there's a website there that's been put together by and used by a lot of people. Can you maybe read out the URL for them, Nathan?
Oh, yep, I can see it, George. It's doggenetics.co.uk.
Bookmark that, Nathan, please. Okay. You know, I always tell bookmark it. So great site put together by Jessica Chappelle, who's actually a photographer artist and sort of created, you know, a fun site at the beginning, and has become an absolute beautiful library of colors and explains it and gives you some really nice photos. So if you click in there, you can see some really nice photos across all breeds.
Yeah, everything's illustrated really nicely.
It's nicely. And if you scroll down, Nathan, you can see Orivet has a nice banner there, and you click on it and it gets you the full the coat color panel.
Ah, very clever. Very clever. And it's great. This is great. I mean, you can see it's got the basics. It's got, goes into all of the locus detail as well. I mean, we'll get there. Before we even get into this, maybe we need to also, you know, for a lot of people that are listening, they probably need to understand. So there's genetic health testing, and then there's phenotypic testing. You used that word before. And phenotypic, if I'm understanding it right, is basically everything that's, you know, more related to the physical appearance and of the dog.
It's the visual. So phenotypic is the visual, genotype is the internal genetic, is what I like to say. So sometimes I might refer to something as being, it's not shown the phenotype. That could be also in a disease. If you've got a disease and your disease is associated with a particular neurological or condition where it goes blind, that's a phenotypic assessment as well. So, yes, I like to refer to it as phenotype, and phenotype includes colours, hair length, type of hair, all those sort of encompassed in phenotypic. Sometimes we have a debate is, for example, the screw tail is a phenotypic test. Is the Adams T3 a phenotypic test? No, yes. Is the natural bobtail a phenotypic test? The argument could be yes or no. So we like to say that they are. So yes, these are all color tests.
Yes.
And where do we start though? Let's have a think where we think. I like to always say, when you look at colors, everything that we talk about in the terminology comes from one animal. Would you want to guess what where all this may have started from? Where do you think all these agoutis and all these color come from? What animal do you think has created all this discussion?
Putting me on the spot here. I mean, is it anything related to dogs, or is it completely separate?
I'll give you no, completely separate. The agouti mouse. So everything, all this terminology that we use has come from not a dog, from a mouse, and yet we still refer to it and use it. So there's a lot of agouti experiments that were done in the mouse. You can all Google that up, and yet we're still using this terminology today. And
Wow.
of course, what's scary about it too, we need to sort of clarify this to some of the listeners, is that colors are important because they make up a defined standard, don't they? So
Absolutely.
when you pull out Johnny Bryson's book, he defines for you what colors are accepted within the standard.
Exactly. And I guess if a dog that is typically one color, you're finding it on the, the breeding market as a completely different color, you know that that's not going to be a pure breed. There's going to be something that's been introduced into that line that would change the color. So it helps the standard colors mean that, it's within the breed standard.
So, of course, some kennel clubs have accept more colours within their standard than the others. For example, the AKC accepts particular colours that outside of the AKC. The MDBA accepts pretty much any colours. So,
That's why color is important. That's why you test for it.
that's right. Some people test because they want to make sure they don't have a non-standard, and some people test because they want a particular standard. Sorry, that could you so let me start by, I'm going to keep it easy for you. So let's look at the Labrador first. Okay, what colors does the Labrador come in that you are aware of?
Well, I mean, there's the ones you probably, most familiar with. You've got your black labs, got your yellow labs, got your chocolate labs. They're probably the three main ones that come to my mind.
Which it then leads us into the first discussion point, which is when something goes from a black pigment to a yellow pigment. So I like to think of colours as being there are particular colours, and then we're going to break down this discussion into what affects the distribution of the colour.
Yeah, because am I right in saying that there's only really two pigments that determine the colors of dogs? That's what I read online is that you've got eumelanin, which is black, and then you've got pheomelanin, which is red, and basically all the different variations in color start from these two pigments.
And then you have other colours that impact the level of the expression of that colour. And then you've got some other things we will talk about in maybe another topic, which is your pieds and your merles. But let's start first with eumelanin, which is we call the E locus. So when you look at a black Labrador, right, it is eumelanin, it has black pigment. So what we do is that we've then created this n nomenclature, which we describe eumelanin as a black dog as a big E. So a big E tells you that the dog is black. So I'm going to then put to you, if something is, so think about it, think about color as I always say, as like a disease. When you're expressing that particular color, you're positive for the disease. So if you're carrying a particular color, then you're carrying another type. So if I say a dog is dominant black, what do you think my nomenclature would be like? What would it be? If say, think about you've got two genes. Capital E means you are black. What do you think dominant black would be?
So it would possibly be capital E for dominant and then capital E, so two dominants.
Because it's inherited. So then, if I'm a black Labrador and I want to try and produce a yellow Labrador, which is the smaller e. What? How would you interpret a result like that? How would you see, I'm a black Labrador that's carrying yellow?
Well, I guess you'd have to be a recessive gene, so there'd have to be a little e or a different color.
A big E with a little E. So all of a sudden, if you've got a big E with a little E and you breed it together with another big E with a little E, these are two black Labradors. They look visually black and they breed together. Then guess what? If the two little E's are passed on, you have a yellow, which is a pheomelanin. That's it. That's how you go from black to yellow. It's as simple. So then the question is, I'm going to put this to you. If you have two yellow Labradors, can you get a black Labrador? Have a think. You've got two yellow Labradors. Can I get a black Labrador?
Well, I would say you can't, because the only way you can get a yellow lab is to have two recessives.
Beautiful. Thank you. Perfect
There we go.
answer, which usually is how sometimes people may question a particular parentage, because they go, oh, wait a sec, you can't get black. You cannot get black from two, because guess what? You've got two little E's. You've got two Fermelinin dogs. You can't produce. Now, you can get, you only need one copy of Big E to be black. So what we say in those terms is Big E trumps little E. So we'd like to use that word trump. It's dominant over. So eumelanin is dominant over pheomelanin.
And that's, I guess, that's the origin of it. I mean, it's funny. This is like taking us back to sort of your year nine biology, where you're sort of looking at, your Punnett squares and, doing all of your basic genetics and all of that. And I guess it's the same thing as, like people think of eye color in that way, and it's the same with dog coat color.
Correct. So there you, that's your basic. Now, what happens is your pheomelanin or your little E can express as different colors in different breeds. So in the Labrador, we sometimes see something that's a yellow or a fox red. And in a standard poodle, what do you think the little E would be? Think about what a poodle comes in when it's black or it's white. So, what is a miniature or toy poodle coming when you see it? It's black or it's apricot. So, this is what I was trying to explain to you before, where you have the same scientific result, yet the expression or the color that it produces is different in that breed.
And that's, yes, and that's obviously where we start to get into the individual locus discussion, because that can actually, as you said, it impacts the expression of that pigment.
Correct. So you've got anything from a little E to being a cream, a white, an apricot, and then sometimes that level of pheomelanin can vary in intensity, and we have a gene that impacts that, which we can talk. And there are modifying genes, so it modifies. You've got the I locus, you've got a G locus, which causes graying in some breeds, and they're even more complex. So now that you know, and the E locus, if you're a dog that's little E or pheomelanin, it masks a lot of other colors. And I'll give you an example. So now we've talked about the E locus, and you sort of get a bit about how that works.
Yeah, that sort of feels like, yeah, I mean, you're sort of feeling like that's the origin of it all. And Labrador is really simple. And I mean, again, for all of our listeners, these are the details that come up when you run a full breed profile on a dog. Obviously, you get all the genetic tests, so you know if it's, a clear or carrier or positive for a disease, but you also know what color markers it's carrying as well. So all of these, E locuses, for example, would come up in the same full breed profile. That's what you're testing for.
So what people need to understand is that, and in some breeds too, and this is probably another podcast, some of these loci are fixed. They don't change. So hence why you won't get a cream or a yellow in specific breeds, because all Staffords are big E, big E. They never exist with the little E. They are fixed at that loci. They do not change. And we'll talk more about some breeds that have fixed loci and what it means. But over generations and generations, sometimes those loci can not be fixed and become and express another color. So we've talked about E locus, and now we're going to talk about the next loci, which is again another color. And it's probably everyone's favorite because it also tastes nice, and that's chocolate.
The chocolate lab.
The chocolate, and or what we sometimes call brown, or what some people also sometimes call liver. So brown is complex because there isn't just one gene that identifies brown. There are three genes described for specific breeds that on the same chromosome that determine brown.
And this is the B locus, the brown locus, is that right? There you go.
And there's just to get scientific, Iovet reports each one separately. We've got the deletion, we've got the stop codon, we've got the insertion. We report each separately. So we refer to them as BC, BD, and BS.
It's not BS.
It's not BS. Well, oh, good. I didn't think of it that way. So the way Brown works is exactly the same way the expression. If you're two big Bs, what do you think that means?
You're dominant brown. You're going to have a brown dog.
If you're big B, little b, you're carrying brown. If you're little b and little b, you're expressing brown. So if you, and then we can talk more about if you're carrying a BC and are carrying a BD, then you are brown as well. And again, we can talk more about. So the key thing to remember here, and I always mention this because remember what I said previously about little e, how it masks other colors. So I'm going to ask you a question. Have you ever gone to a, or have you, you wouldn't see this in the show ring, but have you ever gone and have you ever been at a park and seen a yellow Labrador with liver or chocolate pigment?
Oh, not myself, no.
No, have you ever seen, well, have you, well, I'm telling you, I know my, one of my buddies has one, so they're not desirable. So what happens there is chocolate can only change black hair. So if you have a dog that is little e, and your dog is also a little b, guess what? Your dog doesn't produce chocolate hair. It's it, the little e masks the coat color, so it stays as yellow or white or apricot. But the pigment changes to brown. So the nose, the foot pads, under the eyes have chocolate because although your dog is brown, the pigments that remain, it doesn't express the hair. So what it does is you've got to remember it blocks it. So a dog must be big E, little E, or big E to show brown hair.
And how would that happen, if you're it would, if you're going back to the example we spoke about before, if you've got a chocolate lab, is that like if you made it a chocolate lab with a yellow lab, for example?
So you want to try and avoid putting chocolate together with dogs that are big E, little E. Because if they both pass on the little E, you'll get a yellow Labrador with liver pigment.
Obviously not in the breed standard.
The breed standard. You'll get an apricot poodle with liver pigment. You'll get a. Now, some people take that risk and it's fine because you're putting. And some people just put. Some people sometimes ring me and go, what's happened? My dog, I put two chocolates together. None of them are chocolate. They don't understand that they've also put two dogs together that were carrying yellow. And have hence produced some offspring that were yellow with liver pigment.
And that's, I guess, why you have to look at all of the different locus. So, your yellow, your chocolate lab or your yellow lab, is on the E locus, but then you've also got to look at the B locus at the same time. So you've got to keep in mind a lot of different things, I'm guessing. Like there's a lot of different layers to this.
Totally. This is why I always say, and that's why I think I've started this pod. This sort of discussion with you is with some of the basics first. If you can't understand the E locus, then you'll never get the B locus right. Because once, so, and we again, we sort of get variations in some of the chocolate too. Like some people call them lattes. If you want to be, you want to
That's
be.
getting into a bit of, yeah, the designer dog territory, I guess.
So remember, if you've got any one of the chocolates carrying, you can produce a chocolate. You want to try and avoid putting together a dog that is carrying a small e, because then if you produce a two little e's, you won't see any of the chocolate hair, but you'll see it in the pigment. So you see it. My friend's got a Labrador. It's a great dog. It's a yellow Labrador, and then it's just simply got liver pigment. It's just not seen as desirable.
And so, what would, and to make sure I and maybe the listeners understand, For a chocolate, so what would the e-locus look like for a chocolate lab?
Well, you'd want to make sure that it was either big E, little E, or big E, big E. That's it. So behind the chocolate is a black dog, basically, is what you want. That's it. That's to keep it simple. And not, we're gonna stick to the terminology of big E, little, because it's just, if we stuck to the whole wording, Nathan, the podcast would go for 2 hours just to get
Gosh.
through to it.
This is a bite-sized snippet rather than a 3-hour lecture.
Draw yourself a Punnett square. And remember, it's like a disease. You've got a 25% chance of getting one. So you may it's most likely. So, draw yourself a nice little Punnett squares, big E, little E. So if you want to get chocolate dogs in for all the if you want to get all a litter of all chocolate dogs, what do you think you need? I'm putting you the so you've got a two breeding pairs. You want to make sure that every one of your puppies is chocolate. What do you need? So you need two little Bs on both dogs, right? And to avoid any yellows, they both must be big E, big E. So think about it. I've got two Labradors that are big E, little B, little B, big E, little B. All offspring will be chocolate. If one of those males is also big E, little E, they will all be chocolate. As soon as you have two males that are carrying the little E locus, you can get yellow with liver pigment. So you've got to make sure one of your dogs is big E, big E, if you want your whole litter to be chocolate.
Yeah, so that's the E locus and how it relates to the chocolate.
So once, if we're talking chocolate, I know you like to put some cocoa in your milk sometimes, which brings me on to another type of chocolate called cocoa. Now, where do you think, what breed do you think refers to their chocolate as cocoa? It's a different mutation, so it's separate to the chocolate. It's called cocoa. There is one breed. Let me think. They're very
One
popular.
breed.
And
It's
if
not a poodle or something in
oh no, it's we have the test on our website. You should have been doing some more research.
that.
Referred to as the cocoa as a brown coat color, gives it a different type of brown. It is the French bulldog. So the French bulldog has a specific gene that produces a cocoa, and it's called cocoa. It's on our website. So that's a different mutation, different gene, only found in the French bulldog.
And that's a, and is that a recognized color as well in the French bulldog, or is that a mutation?
It's a recognized color, but not a recognized part of the standard.
Right.
And there's also another brown that is found in some other breeds called the Australian Shepherd. So this is why people need to understand it's just not that easy. There's different mutations. There are some things that cause brown in so we call it the B series or the liver gene. So there's the cocoa, there's also a B locus that's in the Australian Shepherd that we offer that produces sort of a ready chocolate in that breed. And this is why we sort of separate each one, because sometimes we might not offer a particular test that is relevant to that breed to produce brown. So we like to separate it and let people be aware that there are different tests for different breeds. So yes, the cocoa. Now the French call, you can still get a brown using the current B locus to produce chocolates, but the French bulldog, unfortunately, well, fortunately for us, let me have a look, have their own terminology. And maybe that's, we can do a whole segment on it where I don't know whether they call them Isabellas or I'll have to have a look.
Yeah, I've seen the Isabella term come up a bit, but this is all still within the B locus. So this is all, this is still just different variations of that B, and you can get chocolate, you can get, as you said, liver, you can get cocoa, all of these
Different
colors.
and different genes. So, so we've touched on the E locus, we've touched on the B locus. So I'm taking you now through some of the other key colors that are very easy. And where do you think we go to next?
Well, I'm guessing there's got to be something, there's a dilute in there, maybe.
Go, Nathan, see, excellent, correct. So that's right. I like to keep it. So you've got your E locus, you've got your B locus, and then you've got your dilutes, which we call blue or silver or grey. So, and
That's your D locus.
Your D locus, of course. So it dilutes. So sometimes when you look at, so can you tell me one breed that might be fixed at the D locus that only looks, that only appears dilute?
Well, it's got to be a dog that's only in, yeah, a blue or a silver, which is your Vimarama.
That's right, Weimaraner, exactly. So the D locus is not as common as what we see in as the B locus, but it's still there. It's there, you know. And there's controversy about whether it appears in the Labrador, the old silver Labrador, as they call it. You know, I remember 10 years ago when it was first seen in the US, people thought it was crossed with the Weimaraner. And that's how it was introduced. But people need to understand that a modifier or spontaneous recombination of another color can happen in 1 in 8 generations. We've seen it happen in mice. You know, how did we go from a black Labrador to a yellow Labrador to a chocolate Labrador? So there has to be and we've seen the mice model show you that after so many levels of breeding, a mutation can arise and you can get a spontaneous color recombination occurring.
Yeah, I mean, it happens over generations and generations as these things change.
So the D locus is used by a lot of people because it allows you to dilute a particular, it's a modifier. We tend to call it more of a modifier to coat color. So it can dilute a eumelanin or a phenylalanine. So it can make it can make it look. So when you dilute, for example, a chocolate, you may have heard about this. People call it a lilac. So that's what a
Interesting.
lilac is. It's a dilution of a chocolate. And it works in the same way as all the other loci work, Nathan. And that is, if you're big D, you're dominant for dilute. If you're big D, little D, you're carrying dilute. If you're little D, you're expressing dilute. If you're little D, and little B, you're lilac or Isabella, as we call it.
And that's sort of why, I guess, yeah, with you look at your breeds like your Staffies, that's sort of why you can have like a, you know, black Staffie and then a blue Staffie.
Correct, correct. So that's why sometimes you see there's a different mutation that's seen in the Chow Chows.
Yeah, they come in a huge range of colors.
There's a and that same mutation is seen in the Rhodesian Ridgeback, and we offer the D2 variant. There's actually four dilute variants. Orivet offers two of the more common one, and the reason we offer the D2 variant is because in one popular breed, the D2 variant also contributes to dilute. And what do you think that popular breed might be? If there was one breed again that had, you know, it had to have this so-called Chow Chow variant in it, what do you think it might be? I gave you a hint before.
Is it going to be the French Bulldog again?
French Bulldog. So,
That's one breed where color is a very, very desirable trait, and people do tend to go a bit gaga over different colored French Bulldogs.
in this case, the type of dilute you get from the D2 variant is different to the type of dilute that you get from the classical D1 variant, we'll call it. But in the French Bulldog, we also see carriers of D1 and D2, which produces a D1 D2 dilute, which is a different type of dilute. Do you get me? So we're talking two different genes. One's sort of more of an ancient D2 Chow Chow Slophy Thai Ridgeback gene. For some reason, it's seen in the French Bulldog. Don't ask me why. It's there. And I don't want to get into the debate how it's arrived. There's also a
Yeah, something snuck in there at some point. We don't know. Yeah.
maybe a Chow Chow with a smile on his face. I don't know. Maybe it's just a recombination that's occurred. But when you think about it, you know, this ancient D2 variant appears in a French Bulldog. It appears only in about 4% of the French Bulldog population. So the D1 variant is the more common one, which produces the blues and then allows you to have a lilac. But the D2 is actually seen in about, like I said, about 5% of the population. There's also a D3 variant, which we don't offer, unfortunately, and that's detected in the Italian Greyhound, the Chihuahua, the Pumi, the Shih Tzu, the Pekingese, again, some of the ancient breeds. So that was identified in 2020.
But I think this is amazing, right? Like, you know, for the average person who's looking at these dogs and thinking that, you know, it's just simple of putting, you know, black and, you know, black together, that, you know, breeders have to look at all of these different loci and how they interact with each other, and the amount of color permutations and combinations is pretty mind-boggling. Obviously, I mean, there are breed standards, and that's why breeders stick to those standards. But, you know, see, like the French Bulldog, you can just, the permutations are endless.
Totally. And I've only given you the three basic ones.
I know. We've only just scratched the surface.
So, you know, when you look at this great paper that's published by a shout out here to Claire Wade, who's a great local scientist here together with Branson. There's a paper that was Animal Genetics in 2021. It's called Canine Coat Pigmentation Genetics, a review. Basically, listed are all the extensions. You have E1, which we've talked about, E2, E3, EA, and then you've got, don't forget, you've got your masking that's part of the E locus. Let's then look at the dilutions. We've talked about D1, which we offer, D2 again, and there's also the D3 that I quickly mentioned. Let's look at brown. The BS I mentioned, the BDM I mentioned, the BC I mentioned. There's also a BE, which we offer, and the BH, and then under all that sits cocoa. And then dilute, so there's three dilutes. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 browns, and the extensions, there's 5. So there you go.
So if we had to, I guess, you know, as a breeder, you know, maybe this is sort of, you know, we said this was going to be part one in our series of, you know, before we go into even more depth around some of the other you know, loci that we talked about. But, you know, for the average breeder who's looking at these results, you know, there's obviously a lot to interpret. So, you know, what would you say the breeders need to be looking at if they're planning to mate, obviously, two parent dogs together, and they're trying to interpret, you know, these results? What are the key things that they should be looking for?
Good question. And we know that the key thing should be, forget color as being part of your determining what makes a good pet. You know, stick to what you've done, which is, you know, temperament, health testing.
Health and temperament, always number one.
But, you know, sometimes you want a particular colors, and unfortunately you're governed by, you know, and we as consumers always like a bit of a change and like to see whatever's, you know, that, you know, I don't like to use it, but that, you know, the new thing out there, you know, chocolate Labradors were really popular for a while, but you never saw many chocolate Labradors winning trophies in a show ring, if you know what I mean. So, but I can guarantee you the type of chocolate Labrador today is much better in the show ring, is better than what it was 15 years ago, because we're starting to see more. So breeders should try and say to themselves, right, what do I want to stick to? What colors do I want to try and keep? Do I want to stick to one particular color? Do I want to start to look at other potential colors? Because unfortunately, that's what the market wants. I know some people, when they ring up and someone goes, do you have a blue Stafford? One of my mates used to say, yeah, go to Bunnings and get a spray paint and I'll give you a blue Stafford. You know, we just don't like to hear when people are selecting a dog based on a color. But unfortunately, as I said before, the nature of we as consumers are, we want something that's a bit different. So, you know, I think if you can't understand the E, B's and D's, mm-hmm. and then we're going to talk about some of the others, you're not going to get the complex ones like the K locus and the A locus. And we're going to talk about Merle and Pieds and Shades, all like
Harlequins, all of that.
So if you can't get those right, you're going to struggle to get the others.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, and then we've got some of the other phenotypics about hair length we can talk about. So what happens here, to sort of maybe wind up part one of this talk, is to keep those colors as what we call a clean skin. So when I say a clean skin,
you're not talking about wine.
No, I'm talking about a solid coat. So you're clean. Your coat is one color. There's no markings. There's no mismarkings. There's no nothing on it. There's one loci you need to look at, and that is the K locus. If you have two big Ks, in other words, your dominant black at the CBD103 gene, you will have a solid coat.
So the K locus is, yeah, as you said, it's this, how solid the coat is.
Coats. But I'm going to jump in now, because there's going to be people going, George, you're wrong. Yes, I am sort of wrong because there's other modifiers that impact it, like pied and merle.
Right.
They come in and scatter that hay locus to put their markings on it. So a pied will come in and stick some white on for you. A merle will come in and give you seven different variations of merle, which we'll talk about. So 98% of your Labradors and Poodles and breeds that are traditionally solid, like a white Swiss Shepherd, for example, is big K, big K. And then it has either your E locus, your B locus, and your D locus. It doesn't change because it has a solid coat. The K locus, though, on some of these breeds has started to modify and change. You know, all it takes is one to be introduced and into generation of generation. And we're starting to see some dogs that have a distribution of another pattern in there, you know, and you may have heard, especially in the poodle world, someone say, "I've got a phantom, I've got a party." What does that mean? I've
Yeah,
got a, I've,
I have heard those terms come up quite a lot.
I have got a Labrador that show me some, you know, some tan pointing somewhere. That's the K locus and the A locus impacting. And I think what we can try and do is maybe leave that for another session because that's talking about the distribution of color. So
Yes.
we're going to talk more about your fawns, your reds, your tris, your black and tans, which
Your Blenheims.
Blenheims, which are different loci and impacted. But again, the E's, B's, and D's will impact some of those because
Yes.
if you've got a little E, it can really throw all your colors off
Oh,
because
absolutely.
it's the dominant over all of them. So I want people to try and understand this part of it, to read some interesting papers that I've given you this one by
By Claire Way.
Claire Wade, and there's that website. There's also a really good paper that came out by Danica Banash, and it was in 2021 October. It's in Nature, Ecology and Evolution, Volume 5, and it talks about and it explains how colors have evolved from ancient canine origins. So it goes from the wolf to today, and how we've seen some of these. Because think about it. I've mentioned it before that the silver fox experiment is a great example of how selective breeding changes a phenotypic appearance. So you've taken a silver fox, taken it through generation of breeding to tame it down, and as they started to tame it down, what happened? They didn't introduce any other breed, but the coat color changed. So the coat started to reflect you selecting genes that were based on you wanting to have this dog, this silver fox, more domesticated.
I mean, we've still got so much to learn from dogs and dog DNA. And I mean, George, you sent me an article earlier in the week, which was about the dogs at Chernobyl that are still, the descendants of the dogs that were living in Chernobyl, which is a pretty amazing thing as well. These dogs that were left behind as people evacuated, and then descendants now 30, 40, 40 years later. They're surviving. They've adapted to those conditions. We can learn a lot from dog DNA
So
and look
a
into
great
it.
little research and a piece that came out through the ABC just during this week, and I did send it to you, and great to bring it up. It shows you that out of one disaster, we're doing research to try and gain some benefits out of it. You know, what was it, 37 years ago, Chernobyl ha happened, and then what's happened is Ostrander and her group have gone out and been taking samples from these free roaming domesticated dogs that are out there after the, and looking at potential changes in DNA caused by radiation.
Of course.
What a great study! And hopefully, using this to see the impacts of radiation on deterioration of DNA, trying to then build therapies and protective gear to mimic some of these changes. I think they've also seen things like issues of high levels of cataract is one of the things they've seen from the study. Interesting. Touch me on the paper I sent you. What were some of the other interesting things that came out of the paper? I know there was not paper, the research. I know Ostrander's been conducting it with some group in the US there. Was it, are you reading this now? Because I did.
Yeah, I did. I've got it in front of me as well. I mean, it was fascinating, and I think, the, I mean, that these would be because the dogs. I mean, people forget, but obviously the humans evacuated, and they still had long-standing effects from the radiation. But these were, the dogs. They couldn't all take them with them, and these were just free roaming dogs that were left behind, that were there to basically, breed and continue on from those original dogs left behind.
I like what Ostrander quotes in one of those. She goes, the candidates of these dogs, she goes, are dream mutations. You couldn't dream of these sort of mutations because remember, mutations can happen spontaneously or environmentally. So what we've seen here is we are witnessing environmentally caused mutations. She's going to run further tests. They're going to sequence the genomes of these dogs. And it gives them a real good opportunity to try and understand how the genome copes
Yeah.
in such extreme conditions.
Well, that's a question she puts in the paper. She says, how do you survive in a hostile environment like this for 15 generations?
Interesting. So yeah, great paper. I'd be once the research comes out, it'll be, as Ostrander says, it's a cliffhanger.
It's and I think it ties really well into what we've been talking about, because there's so much we can learn from dogs, and there's so much that translates into sort of our own research and understanding of the world as well.
I mean, it was a good segment. We're going to do a segment two on more of the complex colors. And I apologize if some people listen, they think this is all just too basic, George. If anyone doesn't understand the E, B, and D locus, really, they shouldn't be breeding. But we've got to start at the low level, and it's.
And the vast majority of dog owners wouldn't know this either. So I think it's a great way to educate dog lovers about how their beautiful, pooch that's sitting at their feet while they're listening to this podcast got to the way that it did. Inherited the colors that it had.
Correct. So let's also offer a bit of a prize here, Nathan, for any listener. So I want people to email me, the first person to email me with the answer to this question, will win one of John Bryson's books. Okay, so I've got John Bryson's breed books. I've ordered a bucket load, Nathan, just to let you know, they're sitting there now. These are going to be prizes that we'll be offering the podcast.
Fantastic.
I'll post them out, one of John Bryson's great books on standards and what to look for when you're looking at a particular breed. The question we're going to pose to them is, how do I get a Let's think about this. Let's try and give it something so they've actually got to do a bit of work and think
You're
about it.
going to set homework for our listeners. This is a first.
They need to send me what the sire and dam needs to be to produce a Isabella dog.
So what the two parent dogs need to be to produce.
Produce an Isabella or lilac dog.
Okay, we did touch on the lilac earlier as well. So
And remember, it's a trick question. You can have more than one combination of parents. I need all. Don't just send me one. They've got to give me all the tips. So if give me one parent could be this or this or this, another parent could be this or this or this. So the first person to email me, george@irivet.com, to listen to the episode, will win this book.
yep. And you have to say, what is the parent combination that will provide a lilac or Isabella?
Bella dog, coat color dog.
Brilliant. Well, look, George, thank you for taking me and our listeners on a little bit of a journey. We learned a lot about the E, B, and the D, which I said, so we've got everything basic about dogs in our DNA discussion on coat
So
color.
what I hope I've done here, Nathan, is next time you're at a park and you see a black Labrador, or you see a yellow Labrador, or you see a poodle, you see a miniature poodle, or even a cavoodle. Because the same thing applies to an apricot cavoodle. You now start to go, oh, E, B, and D. I have some interesting conversations with people at park, and I go, oh, your dog's little D, big B. And they go, what do you mean? I go, let me give you, I bore them to death with.
We're going to be one of those, but it's going to be like Rain Man. We're going to be seeing all these numbers and letters sort of coming up on everywhere you go.
And we've given people some good reference sites. the dog coat color UK genetic site, some nice reference material. And we've touched on the K locus, and we've introduced, the markings, and we're going to talk about K and A in the next segment. And then we're going to do one on Pied and Merle. And by then, we've covered all the basic colors, and we're going to touch on some of the other phenotypic tests, such as improper coat, curl, long hair gene, all those fluffy, as the French bulldog call them.
Brilliant. Oh, we're just scratching the surface, but we'll post all of these links in our show notes so that all of our avid listeners can go and look into it with a bit more detail. But George, thanks for sharing your knowledge, and we now know a lot more about the E, B, and D locus.
Thanks, Nathan. Thanks, listeners.